Very pleasant good morning to each of you. I join with what Brother Harris has already said in welcoming everyone. And we have so many visitors with us today. Some of you are from other states. Some of you are from this state, but from other areas. And some of you are from this area where we also call home. And you're our guest. You're visiting with us, and we're glad to have you. If you're looking for a church home in this area, we would be glad to talk with you about that if that is your preference. But we're glad you're with us today, and look forward to conversing with you or meeting you if we haven't done so already after the assembly is over in just a few moments. I'm going to ask you to turn your Old Testament back to the book of Habakkuk that was read in your hearing moments ago, to the third chapter of Habakkuk, and verse 17, 18, and 19 that was read in your hearing moments ago. What do you do when life doesn't work out the way you think it should? What do you do when God doesn't show up the way you think He should? What do you do when you pray and there seems to be no answer? What do you do when you pray and the answer is no? What do you do when you hurt in deep places and your new life normal isn't normal at all? What do you do then? When I travel, I always take a book. And my book this past week that I read in Columbus, Ohio, was the book Daring to Hope: Finding God's Goodness in the Broken and the Beautiful by Katie Davis Majors. Katie Davis Majors is a Tennessee girl who moved to Uganda to take care of the impoverished. And in this book, she describes the death of her friend, who happened to be a young mother of five. And this is what she writes. The silence in our home after Catherine's death threatened to choke us all. The silence screamed of failure, of prayers unanswered, of hope denied. I sat each night on the bathroom floor, the place that had become my prayer closet, where when every other room in the house held sleeping people. I would come and I would sit and I would pray. In the late night hours, alone with the Lord, on the cold, hard floor, I beat my fists against the tile and against my father's chest, crying, "How could you let her die?" Sobbing until words would come no more. I asked hard questions of God. I didn't understand how He could have allowed me to believe so strongly that Catherine would live when that was not His intent. How could a loving God see my hope, know what I was believing, and know that the ending would not be the one for which I was hoping and believing? It felt unfair. It felt cruel. And I let God know it. You know what I think? I think some of you have pounded on the same floor. I think some here know the same feeling that she had. The same frustrations. The same unanswered questions. But the great comfort in all of that, ladies and gentlemen, is that some of God's greatest servants in Scripture felt the same thing. Job did. So did David. And so did this prophet that we just don't know much about, Habakkuk. And I tell you what will happen this morning if you dare to blow the dust off this old book, and if you dare to look into the mirror of this minor prophet, you may see something very surprising. You may see a reflection of yourself. Habakkuk didn't understand. His prophecy is unique among the prophets. I'll tell you why that is. His prophecy is unique because it's different from Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Hosea and all of those other prophets. His prophecy is unique because instead of addressing his countrymen, instead of addressing foreign nations, he addresses God. His cry is to God alone. And it is the passionate plea of a man who doesn't understand the violence of the world in which he lives. He looks around the world and he sees all of these wrongs. And his question to God as he beats on the bathroom floor is, why are you allowing this to happen? Look in chapter 1. Before we get to chapter 3, look at chapter 1 and verse 2 and verse 3. And see if this doesn't ring true to our time. Habakkuk 1 verse 2. How long, O Lord, will I call for help and you will not hear? I cry to you, violence, yet you do not save. Why? Why do you make me see iniquity and cause me to look on wickedness? Yes, destruction and violence are before me. Strife exists and contentions arise. His cry is first, how long? How long am I going to call for you? How long am I going to pray? And it's like you're not hearing. And his second question in verse 3 is why? Why would a good God allow such evil to exist? Why don't you come quickly and make everything right? Why are you not hearing my cries? Why am I surrounded by such violence and wickedness? That seems to be the questions a lot of people are asking these days. When a racist walks into a church just up the road and starts shooting people, when a mentally deranged person walks into a Texas church and starts shooting people, when a religious radical drives a truck down a crowded New York street and just mows down innocent people, it's the same question asked every time. Why? And our friends and our neighbors and ourselves, we ask the same question. Where is God in our world of hurt? Where is God in my world of hurt? That's the question he's asking. And it's a good question. When you look around and the world you live in doesn't match the goodness of the one who made it. Lord, why would you allow such suffering to come upon innocent people? That's his question. And the amazing thing as Habakkuk asks this question is that instead of going to everybody else, instead of engaging in endless discussions and speculations, he goes right to the source. He goes right to God. And what he learned from this is what all of us must learn from this. And one of the things we have to learn is God doesn't always take away our pain. But sometimes he just holds us. Sometimes He just holds us while we hurt. Come unto me, all of you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. If you have your bulletin this morning, on the back page is our outline. Because when you read the prophet Habakkuk, you start with this problem. And the problem is faith sighing. Faith sighing. Don't you do that when you read and hear or watch the news reports of another day of senseless violence? Don't you just sigh? And as Habakkuk opens up this message, he's struggling. He's doubting. And the problem with doubting, the problem with doubting God didn't just start with Habakkuk, and it didn't end with Thomas either. Because I'm thinking all of us, as we grow in our faith, I think all of us have to work through the very same nagging questions. And I think all of us at times walk through the valley of the shadows of doubt. But the message of Habakkuk is a pretty simple message, and that is God loves even the doubter. Not the despairing doubter like Judas who just gives up on God. Or maybe a worldly doubter like Demas who loved this present world. And some people use doubt as their excuse to live however they want to live. But the honest doubter. The person who's trying to wrap his mind around all of these things. The person who turns to God as he still wrestles with all of these questions. Rather than run away from God just because something has happened in my life and I don't have the answer and I don't understand. I tell you one thing is for sure, Habakkuk did not understand. And Habakkuk came pounding on the floor and he came asking, God, why don't you do something? I see evil, I see violence, I see injustice, iniquity. Why don't you do something? Look in verse 4 of chapter 1. Therefore the law is ignored. Justice is never upheld. For the wicked surround the righteous, and justice comes out perverted. Why? He said, God, if you are just, where's the justice? You see, it is the agony of perplexity. And then God answers him. And God's answer to the prophet in chapter 1 is the reminder that simply nobody gets away with it. And then God said, if I told you what I'm going to do about this, you wouldn't believe it. I'm not making that up. Look in verse 5. Look among the nations. God is speaking. Look among the nations. Observe. Be astonished. Wonder. Because I am doing something in your days. You would not believe it if you were told. What are you going to do about this, God? Verse 6. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, that fierce and impetuous people who march throughout the earth. God said, I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to bring the Babylonians to punish my people, your people. And Habakkuk tries to process that information, and he says, in essence, he says, what? They're worse than we are. How could you do that? Habakkuk says, I don't believe it. And God says, that's what I told you you would say. I don't believe it. Back to the Katie Davis Majors book. She writes, I didn't want the story to end this way because I had written the ending in my head where my friend gets better, where she becomes strong and healthy, where she is able to take care of her children. In my ending, we would all cry happy tears as a family is made healthy and whole. To me, that was the ending that would most glorify God. In my ending, I wouldn't have to look into the faces of her children and tell them, your mother has died. In my ending, I wouldn't spend hours upon end and days upon end helping her get well when she wouldn't. In my ending, we wouldn't be lowering the casket into the ground. My ending was very, very different. Well, so was Habakkuk's. He envisioned a very different ending too. Now, I don't know what he thought. Maybe he thought that God was just going to intervene. And when it comes to all of the violence and all of the evil, God was just going to miraculously call a halt to all of it. I don't know what he thought. But I know that the ending that Habakkuk had in mind and the ending that God had in mind were two different endings. We're not the same. Which brings us, ladies and gentlemen, to a minor prophet with a major message. And my favorite part of the Habakkuk story is what he does with all of this. He puts flesh on his faith. Look in chapter 2 and verse 1. I will stand on my guard post and station myself on the rampart. What does that mean? That means a tower, a guard tower. I will watch, he is saying. Verse 1. I will watch to see, and he will speak to me. Habakkuk doesn't understand the violence. He doesn't understand God's lack of response, at least to him. And when God tells him how he's going to respond, he doesn't understand that response. So what does he do? He says, I'm going to trust, even when I don't understand. Because here's a man who believed that he could trust God even when he didn't have all the answers to all the questions. And so Habakkuk says, I'm going to watch and I'm going to pray and I'm going to wait on Him. And the whole message of the second chapter is, nobody gets away with this. Yeah, I'm going to use the Babylonians to punish my people, but then I'll make sure the Babylonians are punished for their evil. There will be justice for all, he says. And the takeaway from all of this, ladies and gentlemen, is that the prophet didn't walk away just because he had questions he couldn't answer. Instead of walking away from God, he walked to God. And he said, I'm going to watch and I'm going to wait. And he did. Which brings us to the promise. Faith sighing becomes faith seeing. Seeing. What is faith? Oh, we can roll off Hebrews 11 verse 1. Automatic. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. Okay, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Somebody said faith is trusting in advance what will only make sense to you in reverse. Faith is trusting in advance what will only make sense in reverse. That's it. And the key verse in the passage is chapter 2 and verse 4. Chapter 2 and verse 4. Behold, as for the proud one, his soul is not right within him. But contrast that, the righteous will live by faith. That is the heart of Old Testament godliness and the soul of New Testament Christianity. It must be. It's repeated three times in the New Testament. The righteous will live by faith. Faith is believing that the God of all creation ultimately and eternally can take care of everything. Listen, God is not asking Habakkuk to understand everything, to define everything, to defend everything, to be able to put an answer to all of the why questions. He's only asking him to do what he's asking you to do. Trust. Trust. Walk by faith. He says in chapter 2, the Babylonians aren't going to get away with it. In fact, he pronounces five woes on them. I highlighted them in my Bible. Verse 6, chapter 2. I said, woe to him who increases what is not his. Verse 9, woe to him who gets evil gain. Verse 12, woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed. Verse 15, woe to those who make your neighbors to drink. Verse 19, woe to him who says to a piece of wood, awake, to a mute stone, arise. And that is your teacher? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, and there is no breath inside of it at all. These idol worshippers, they're not going to get away with it, he says. I'll take care of them. I'll take care of Israel. I'll take care of you. And look at the last verse in verse 20, the awe of silence. How does Habakkuk deal with all of this? But the Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before Him. It reminds me of what Job said when Job tried to talk about stuff he didn't really know. And he listened to all his friends tell him stuff that they didn't know. And finally, Job in chapter 40, verse 3 and 4 says, I lay my hand on my mouth. Maybe I better just be quiet. Here is a man in this prophet, when he had nowhere else to turn, he turned to the only one he could trust. And the question is, where are you going to turn? Where are you going to turn? So you have the problem, faith sighing, as he sees all of this violence and wickedness. You have the promise, faith seeing, as he's going to wait and watch and pray. And finally, you have the process of it all, working through it, faith singing the glories of God. Because I tell you what Habakkuk's doing. Habakkuk's doing the same thing Jacob was doing in the book of Genesis. He's wrestling with God. He's wrestling with God. Dogged by doubts and questions he can't answer, he's got a decision to make, just like you and I have a decision to make. By the way, and I think I put this in your notes, the name Habakkuk literally means he who clings. He who clings. And the point is, the prophet made a decision to cling to the Lord. Even when he couldn't answer the questions. Even when he didn't understand, when he couldn't explain everything. In the midst of this changing, violent world, which was his and ours, the message of this little 3-chapter prophecy is pretty simple. Why don't you cling to the only one who doesn't change? And he ends with the passage that we began in the reading this morning, verses 17, 18, and 19, which is the mountaintop of the prophecy. Habakkuk 3 and verse 17, though the fig tree should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vine, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the field, and there be no cattle in the stall, yet I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. And He has made my feet like hinds' feet, the swift feet of the deer. And He makes me walk, not in the valley of the shadows of doubt. He makes me walk on high places. God enables me to climb above the fray. 3 chapters. There's a lot in there. Sometimes people say, I don't know why anybody wants to study these old prophets. They don't have anything to do with us. Really? We look at the violence, we look at the pain, we look at the suffering, and we wonder, why does God allow this to happen? And Habakkuk says, you know, sometimes the fig tree does not blossom. Sometimes the olive trees are bare. Sometimes the stalls are empty. Sometimes the world looks very bleak. So what are you going to do then? Sometimes we feel like Abraham that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. We're climbing up Mount Moriah and we don't even know what God is doing or even asking. But even as we wonder, question, even as we wonder and even as we wrestle to make sense of it all, we still cling. We still Habakkuk. We cling to Him. Not because we're happy about the world of hurt that is all around us or even understand it. But we cling because He is our strength. We cling because we know that He is good. We cling because we know He's our only hope and the only hope that we have. I love this song. Jesus, draw me ever nearer. I'm going to ask you to stand right now. This is not a song you just go through quickly. The words of this song need to penetrate your soul. They need to get into your heart. It is a song that you need to sing with great passion. I want you to listen to these words. Jesus, draw as I labor through the storm. I don't know what storm you have in your life right now, but I believe there's probably to this passage. You have called me to this life. I am tired. May bring a blessing. Maybe there's something that I have experienced that through me, through you, you be a blessing to somebody else. Journey a blessing. May I rise on wings of faith. The righteous will live by faith. That's what Habakkuk learned. And at the end of my heart's testing, you're being tested today like never before. With up clinging to you. Jesus, guide me through the storm. Keep my spirit stayed and sure. When the night meets the morning, those night and you're awake at 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock, and when the sun rises, you're still awake. Because your heart is heavy. You can't sleep. When the midnight meets the morning, let me love you even more. God will take care of you during those nights too. May this journey bring may I rise on wings of faith, and at the end of my heart's testing, with your likeness, let me wake. And finally, he says, let the treasures of the trial. You mean there's treasure in trial? There's some good that can come from this? Let the treasures of the trial form within me as I go. You can either make a choice to become better or bitter. And guess whose choice that is? Let the treasures of the trial form within me as I go. And at the end of this long passage, let me leave them at your throne. May I rise on wings of faith, and at the end of my heart's testing, with your likeness, let me wake. Do you need our encouragement today? Do you need our help? Won't you come while I sing this song?